here to share with us on his experience with this step. Thanks, Chuck.
Thank you. My name is Chuck. I am an alcoholic of the type about whom a whole chapter could be written. I'm a member of the Fall River Archway to Freedom Men's Big Book Step Study. I am in the book in this meeting as a member. I joined here in 1995 and went through the work with a fellow from this group back then. I'm also a member of the Marion Morning Eye Openers meetings, where I try to go fishing for prospects. When I was a little kid, about 4 or 5, I was with a neighbor, dragged around out in the backyard. He was playing, you know, whatever he was playing, and he pulled me into a secluded area in my parents' backyard and did some stuff to me that was not right. And I had some major issues over that. And then when I was about 7 or 8, I had an older relative who did the same thing in the privacy of my parents' home. And at some point, the only way I could find relief from those things was to drink. And my drinking went hand in hand with trying to block out the intolerable situation, which was my life. As I grew older and drinking became fun, my sex conduct became a little erratic. And I used women and things to get over on the injuries that I had or perceived I had from the two guys that got me early on. And there was a third incident that has recently come to the limelight. They say as you go through treatment for those types of things, sometimes old events come up, and they have. So I got into trouble with drinking, a lot of car accidents, a lot of personal injuries. I quit drinking in 88 in open AA or AA, quite frankly. This is Big Book Step Study. AA is AA. And I got into AA and my drinking got ruined. And my life got ruined because I was just constantly thinking about drinking. I was restless, irritable, and discontent. And I was very unhappy. And I was taking that out on other people in a lot of different ways. In late 95, my sister, who is about 4 years older than me, had done this work at the Hyannis Women's Big Book Step Study meeting, and my mother was dying of cancer, and she made amends to my mother. And it was probably, I would say, in March or April of 95, and I went to visit my mother. She lived close by, and my mother told me that I needed to do what my sister had done. And I had heard all the stuff you hear about these meetings, that they're Nazi meetings, you can't talk unless you've done the work, those guys are jerks, you know, the whole litany of contempt prior to investigating the problem. And I was 12-stepped into Big Book Step Study by a cousin of mine whose brother drowned in front of my parents' house when I was in my 20s. He was an active alcoholic and a junkie, and he got sober and was coming down to the Big Book Step Study with a bunch of guys, Euless, Sig, Norman, and Billy M. And he said, you know, you might want to try this out. And I was like, yeah, I'll try this out. And when my mother told me that I needed to do what my sister had done, My sister's a lesbian, so I looked at my mother and I said, so you want me to become a lesbian, Mom? And she said, no, you need to do the steps like she's done them. And I didn't have anywhere else to go. I was 7 years sober. I was freaking miserable. I had 2 kids, 2 jobs. And I could not get out of the misery I was living. I tried everything. So I got into the meeting down on the Cape, and it was a relief to me to go to a meeting where you didn't have to try to say something. It was actually comforting. And it was also a relief to me that the people in the room knew more about me and what I was thinking and what I was doing than I knew about myself at that time. Some of the guys that are still here, Erlen, Donnie, Bobby, they were the guys that I was quite frankly scared to death of. They had a solution to their problem. They had done something that I had only heard about, and I jumped in. And I started writing, and this is kind of funny, I had a vasectomy on November 9th, and the guy who I asked to be my first sponsor in Big Book Step Study was getting married the day after, and I figured, you know, I'll go home and I'll have had the surgery and I can sit around for the day or two and I'll write my fourth step. And I went to his wedding, and I had taken a painkiller for the discomfort, and I took one like they prescribed it, and then before I left I took one with me to go to the wedding. And I, at the service, I went to the bathroom, took the second one on time, and I ended up in the basement of the church having a really bad reaction to whatever it was they gave me. And it was crazy. And to think that I was going to sit down that day and write my fourth step or start it was like kind of a joke. But I did what they said. I had set up a schedule. I was going to the Tuesday night meeting in Fairhaven, which had just started, and I was going to the men's Hyannis Big Book Step Study meeting on Thursdays. And my commitment to my sponsor was that I would write on Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday nights. I would take the night off on Saturday to spend with my kids. My son was 2 at the time, and my daughter was 6. And I wrote every night practically on that schedule. From, they'd go to bed at 7:30, 7:15. I wrote from 8 to 11, sometimes later, and then I would go to bed and get up. And I got to this part of the step, and they said to write down all of the people, things, and animals that you had had sex with at the meeting that I was going to. And I had no animals on the list. But there were 4 people on the list that stick out in my mind. One was the guy that tagged me when I was 4. The other was the guy that tagged me when I was a little older. Myself. And the first person that I had had heterosexual sex with was my father's boss's daughter. And the incident took place in my bunk bed at home when I was 15. I had a bottle of Jack Daniels, and she stole 2 of her mother's Valiums. And I ate the Valiums, drank the Jack Daniels, and I had my first heterosexual sexual encounter. So as the book says, what does it say? We all have sex problems. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. I had my share. And in looking at those incidences, I reviewed my conduct. And in the incident of the guy who lived next door to me, where was I selfish? I didn't want anybody to know. And at an early age, I formed a basis for living, which was dishonest in that when I didn't want anybody to know anything, I didn't let them know. And I ate it. And it caused me great pain. Where was I dishonest? I never told anybody. I lied about it. Kept it inside. In the third grade, at a desk one day, I had a pen in my hand. And I was sitting at my desk and I was thinking to myself, how possibly can I jam this thing into my sternum and pop my heart so I die? That's what stuffing those emotions and those feelings got me to. It then says, where were we inconsiderate? I was inconsiderate of my parents in that instance, and as it turned out, I was inconsiderate of two of my sisters who the guy got later on. Whom had I hurt? I hurt myself, I hurt that guy, I hurt other people. Did I unjustifiably arouse jealousy? I don't think so. Suspicion? Yes. My mother knew something had happened to me. She tried to get it out of me. I had nightmares until I had done my my fifth step. Where did I arise? Bitterness? The bitterness was all mine. I owned it. I kept it inside and I kept it there. Where was I at fault? I've come to understand that I wasn't at fault for any of it. I was a four-year-old. He might have been 13 or 14. He was doing stuff that a kid who was curious about his puberty or early adolescence would do. And that only came to me recently after a lot of work with a counselor about that situation, my brother's situation, and some other things. What should I have done instead? There was nothing I could do. It was my destiny to have that happen. And in the instance of my relative, basically the same questions, basically the same answers. I had a lot more pain over that one than I did the first one because the person that got me was a relative, somebody that I should have been able to trust, somebody that shouldn't have done what happened. But again, that person was only 5 or 6 years older than me at the time, and I was maybe 7, 13. It's an inquisitive time. It's a learning thing. And it's what it is. Now, if you look at the first heterosexual commitment I had, and I look at the questions, where was I selfish? I wanted to get laid. Where was I dishonest? I told her that I loved her. I told her that I wanted to be with her, blah, blah, blah. I told her to get her mother's Valium so we could have a really good time. Where was I inconsiderate? There's a whole wave of inconsiderate in that one. Could you imagine what would have happened if she had gotten pregnant? Just think of that. My father and this guy that he worked with went to college together. They'd known each other at that point probably for 30 years. It would have made a real mess. Whom had I hurt? I hurt her, I hurt myself, and without even knowing it, I hurt my parents because I couldn't talk about it. I mean, wouldn't it be nice to be able to go to your parents and say, hey, I was with so-and-so last night, we drank a pint of Jack Daniels, and I banged her in the bunk beds upstairs. It just, how can you be honest about that? Whom had I hurt? I hurt her, me. Did I unjustifiably arouse jealousy? Not then, but afterward. One of my motives when I got somebody to do what I want them to do is I would get really remorseful and guilty about it. I suffered from great Catholic guilt over these things. And then I would move on to the next one and trash the first one with the next one. And it was like a chain reaction of individuals who were getting just burned. What should I have done instead? I probably should have read the books my parents gave me and stuck to myself. But I got it all down on paper and I looked at it. And I had some other things that were equally embarrassing and equally unpleasant to deal with. And you know, there were the videos, books, magazines, trying to get a gay guy in South Carolina to give me a quart of rum so I let him do stuff to me that I shouldn't have let him do. And, you know, basically prostituting yourself to get what you want. So I had that all on paper and looked at it, and I shaped an ideal for future sex life. And this was 24 years ago, and I've done more work and shaped more of an ideal as time goes on. I can tell you I've been married for going on 29 years. I have a 28-year-old daughter. I have a 24-year-old son, and it's like watching my life in freaking slow motion all over again. The kid does exactly what I did. It's hard to try to talk to him about it, but I just try to maybe lead by my example. I've had other issues come up in marriage that, you know, self-abuse takes the place of real intimacy, and it can ruin a relationship, it can hurt a relationship. I know that now. I try to avoid it. Talking about old times, sometimes you're at a party and people start talking about things that happened, and it's embarrassing for you, and it can really hurt the person that you're with if they hear about it. My sisters, I have seven sisters, so a lot of my angst and my activities was directed sometimes at them and taken out on other people. It says in this that we don't go back to those women that we've hurt. And I'm kind of a Catholic, probably more devout than most, and I used a prayer to try to go over the things that I did to people and to ask for forgiveness and to be forgiven for the things that I did that were unseemly, rather than taking people down again years later. Ironically, a girl, one of the last escapades I had was with a girl that I was like friends with. We were tight. And she had kidney ailments and she was always sickly. And we were watching the Boston College Miami game at a party one night. We were both kind of fucked up. And one thing led to another, and it didn't end well. Ruined the relationship. 2009, I was working out in the Great Lakes, and I was taking a plane ride home. And I get to the airport, and she's sitting there with her daughter, and her husband and son are sitting there. So I just walked over and said hi, and she said, sit down. I sat down, and then as it turned out, we get on the plane, and her husband and son are sitting in A and B. I'm in C, and her daughter and she are in D and E for the whole fucking plane ride back to bed. And she and her daughter are talking about a date. The daughters get invited to the prom, and the mother doesn't want her to go to the prom because the daughter's a freshman and this guy is a senior, and it's an uncomfortable situation. And the woman looks at me and she said, what would you tell your daughter if she wanted to do this? And I looked at the girl and I said, you know, guys are bastards. They don't really care about anything you have. They don't really care about you at all. What they really want to get to is what's the most special thing to you. And I'm sure this guy's telling you all kinds of great things. And he's probably trying to be your friend, and he's trying to win you over with whatever it is, maybe an ice cream, maybe he's taking you to a movie or whatever. But in my experience, I would tell you to keep your distance from him. If you do go to this prom, if your parents allow you to, keep your distance from him. He's not in it for you. He's in it for himself. And the poor woman looks at me and she's crying. And she says, you talk to your daughter like that? And I said, I absolutely did. We talked about stuff that went on in my life. She had heard the stories about different girls from different sisters and different siblings. And I said, it made sense to me to tell her that guys can be pigs because they can. And got off the plane, did my business, and I haven't had an extramarital affair. I've thought about it. I had a guy who I did a fourth step with one time, fifth step, and he didn't read his sex inventory to me. And he came to me after and he told me why. And I started to work with that guy on problems I was having with my sex inventory. And he told me one of the safest things to do whenever you feel like you're gonna have a problem is to pray for the custody of your eyes and the sanity to think of something else when those things present themselves. And today, that's kind of my ideal. I don't look at women as pieces of fun. I look at them as God's creatures. I look at them as, how would I like somebody to look at one of my sisters or my daughter? And last couple of years have been tough for me. I mentioned that I suffer from a condition that the book talks about in the doctor's opinion. And through being treated with a psychiatrist for a long time, since the 80s, my kidneys started to fail. And I had to take myself off of medication that was basically allowing me to think. And I had to try different things that would help. And in doing so, I got into a real bad way about 2.5 years ago. And I was sharing at a meeting in Quincy one night, and a guy came up to me after the meeting and he told me that he thought we might have some kismet going on. I called the guy up, and it turns out that he's in the psychiatric field, he's a doctor, he's in Big Book, and I started working with him. And one of the relationships with one of the guys that abused me was really giving me a hard time. I was a fucking mess. And I was taking it out on everyone and everything that I put around me. And he got together with me, and through a bunch of discussions, he tied my alcoholic life, my psychiatric life, and the traumas that I had experienced. And he put them all together, and he turned to me in a room one night, and he said to me, I want you to see the labyrinth of your life, and what is a big basis in fact, other than the fact that you're an alcoholic, for why you've done what you've done. And he showed me it, and he said, what do you think you need to do? And I said, I know exactly what I need to do. And he said, well, what is it? And I said, well, I have to admit to the second step, and I have to take the two things that are the most glaring in my inventory that we've been talking about, and I have to forgive those two people. And he said, why do you have to do that? And I said, because if I don't forgive them, I will never be able to know that anybody else could forgive me. And he looked at me, and it wasn't as calm as this going on when we were talking about it. And he looked at me and he said to me, you know, I've been at this for almost 43 years. And today is the highlight of my career. So if you're sitting here for the first time tonight and you're asking yourself, what the fuck does sex have to do with my drinking? It has everything to do with your drinking. And if you're asking yourself what your drinking has to do with your sex, it has everything to do with it. And the only real antidote to the whole thing is to find somebody that's done what I've talked about. Try to do it with him and a power greater than yourself, and be free. Free from your past, free going forward, free. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you.